This is a TechWeb Internet Insider Profile. I'm Senior Editor Paul Schindler.
Well, there were just so many funny things that happened to me, and I learned so much in such a short time that I thought other people would be interested. I mean, love them or hate them, there's a lot to learn from Microsoft. They win a lot of the time.
Julie Bick worked for Microsoft as an intern in 1989 and returned with her MBA in 1990. She worked in marketing till she left in 1995 to work part-time and raise her two children. She then wrote the first book about Microsoft and its culture from an insider's perspective. The title? All I Really Needed to Know in Business I Learned at Microsoft, Insider Strategies to Help You Succeed. The book was a bestseller and has recently been reissued in paperback. I spoke with Julie about her book, about Bill G. Reviews, and about the intersection between the Microsoft culture and the U.S. Department of Justice. Why did you write this book?
Well, there were just so many funny things that happened to me, and I learned so much in such a short time that I thought other people would be interested. I mean, love them or hate them, there's a lot to learn from Microsoft. They win a lot of the time.
Do you have any feedback that indicates to you that all or most of these lessons are applicable in other industries outside of computers and software?
Oh, I've had tons of feedback to that effect. The guy from the Boston Globe said this is good for any entrepreneur. I've been asked to speak at the Washington State Dental Association, if you can believe that one. And places like Marriott and Lucent have called. So really a whole variety of places have called to either get more information or to have me come speak.
If you had to pick a particular chapter or a particular piece of advice in this book to emphasize, which would it be?
I guess probably one of the most interesting things in the book is how Microsoft treats failure, and I think it's a good lesson for a lot of people, a lot of corporations. Because you figure, well, Microsoft really does focus a lot on success. You know, their big marketing budgets and their, you know, I want to win the whole world kind of attitude. And that's true. I mean, it's really true down to every level. There's a manager who came back from a trade show, and the product team had won 9 out of 10 possible awards for the product. It was Word for Windows. And so he sent out this email sort of joyously announcing this to the group. And within 24 hours, he had 40 emails back asking which was the one award they had not won and why. So you could tell they really focus a lot on success. But given that, the way they treat failure is really surprising. They don't just, you know, fire the person that screwed up or demote them or send them away off to, you know, some crazy subsidiary or something. They really figure, well, you know, if this person can sort of dust themselves off and learn from the experience and go on, you know, they'll be smarter. So we shouldn't fire the person that's failed. And there's a great story. There's a young guy, and he had to bring some bad news to Bill Gates. It was a couple of years ago. He said, there's a bug in the spreadsheet, and we're going to have to recall it from all the stores, and it's going to cost all this money. It's kind of a disaster. His knees are probably shaking, presenting all this to the CEO. But Bill kind of looked at him and said, well, today you lost $250,000, and tomorrow you should probably do better. And that guy now, Jeff Rakes, is in the office of the president at Microsoft. So you can really tell that they do let people fail and move on.
I'm sure you know that there is criticism of the Microsoft culture for being too aggressive and for a willingness to skate right up to the edge of the rules. Judging from the positive tone of your book, I don't believe you would characterize the culture that way. But did you see elements in the culture when you were there that, taken to an extreme, might have a negative effect on the externalities of Microsoft?
Well, I guess anything taken to an extreme would have a negative effect. But it's funny because things like with the whole Department of Justice suit and having the government tell Microsoft what they can and can't do and, you know, I guess basically taking that culture and shackling it a little bit, asking, you know, it's sort of like asking people at Microsoft not to make the best products they can, which is sort of like asking the slugger on the baseball team not to hit for the fences. It's like, well, I know you could probably hit a home run, but don't even try it. Why don't you just hit a double? Like, you know, the fans want you to hit a home run, and you want to hit a home run. Your manager wants you to hit a home run. But if people are saying, hey, just go for a double, you know, why don't you let the other team have a fair shot? That's kind of what it's like.
How about the arrogance problem? First of all, do you even concede it? A lot of people at Microsoft don't. Would you concede that Microsoft as an entity and some of the people in Microsoft can come off as arrogant when they're speaking to outsiders?
Yes, definitely.
When I talked to Bob Herbold, he said he recognized that, and he said arrogance is not always a good thing. He said
No. It's
not even necessarily mostly a good thing.
No.
And he would like to introduce, he didn't use the word humility, but I think the import of his remarks was he'd like to introduce some humility into the culture. Do you think a little humility would be helpful in the Microsoft culture?
Probably. It's funny because sometimes, you know, it'll take Microsoft three versions to get a product to be really good, or it'll take three plans to, you know, get a corporation, you know, to buy the product or something like that. Well, maybe it just kind of takes three tries to figure out how to be a little bit better spoken, either, you know, with the government or partners or competitors or whatever. So maybe they're just kind of working on it.
Is all of Microsoft really a reflection of a set of principles that Bill Gates and Paul Allen had coming in?
I think it's
culturally.
Completely. Completely and utterly a reflection of Bill Gates. Completely.
So if you understood Bill Gates, you'd understand Microsoft.
I think so. I mean, the example I gave about failing and letting people fail, that was Bill Gates that let that guy fail and moved him all the way up to president. Well, when Bill does that, then his next line of managers do that, and the people that report to them do that, and so on down to the lowest level, you know, interns can screw up and still get hired back, you know, if they're smart and, you know, people think they're going to learn. So it's really what Bill does, the rest of the company does.
As you may know, outsiders have a perception of Bill G. reviews as being peculiarly unpleasant occasions. His biographers suggest that one of his favorite catchphrases is, "That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard." And in fact, he's said it to me twice. Is that a positive atmosphere for a product review? I'm baffled.
I can't say it's positive. It's very challenging. It really makes people, you know, it's scary, but it really makes people prepare very well for it. And the thing is, once you've prepared everything you know about your competitors, your product, the market, your customers, the technology, the international scene. Once you've prepared all of that so you can get grilled by Bill, you are pretty much set for the rest of the year. You've just passed the final and, you know, you know your stuff for the rest of the year.
Is there such a thing as a positive review from Bill?
Oh, definitely. Actually, my husband works on Slate magazine, which
uh-huh.
is an online political and cultural magazine. And they got some email from Bill that just said he really thought the magazine was great, and even though it's small right now, he wants to commit a lot of marketing funding to it, and he gets compliments on it all the time. I mean, I think my husband probably framed that email and put it on his wall.
Is fear and trepidation necessarily the best motivator to do your homework? No, that's not fair. Let me try that again.
It's really not.
But it happens to be the way he works, and therefore that's
that's what
happens.
We deal with. They people that can survive that do well at Microsoft. It might not be the best, really, way to manage things, but it seems to work so far.
Now, the other thing I wanted to ask you, though, in fairness, is that he is also known to be fairly generous with his praise, occasionally in person and much more frequently by email. Isn't that true?
That's true. That's more like the example of that I just told you about him sending email about Slate magazine and how great he thought it was, even though it's so little on his radar screen. You know, it's probably one millionth the size of the Windows business or something like that.
Does he practice management by walking around? If you are a non-managerial level employee, what are your odds of ever running into Bill, say if you're there for 5 years?
Gosh, when I first came to the company and there were only 5,000 employees, you would see him walking around. He did give a bunch of presentations for new hires and, you know, this and that kind of thing. But when I left and the company was about 20 or 25,000 people and there were just campuses all over, you know, the city pretty much, you really, you know, rarely saw him.
Is he important internally as an icon? If you had a five-year career there and never saw him and never had a Bill G. review, would you feel like you were less of a Microsoftie because of that?
I don't know about less of a Microsoftie, but I'd say you probably missed out on an interesting experience. It's sort of like, you know, working with Andrew Carnegie or Henry Ford of their era. I think Bill Gates is sort of that guy for now.
Is it enormously important at Microsoft to maintain the culture that you've described in your book? And do you think they can do it? Have they done it so far during the time you were there?
They've definitely maintained it. You know, as you said, there's some, you know, rough around the edges part of the culture that might not be that great to keep, you know, the super aggressiveness and things like that. But the desire to win and the desire to make the best products and, you know, the desire to please customers and all that kind of stuff, I hope they hold on to.
Do they seem to be concentrated on holding on to it, as far as you can tell?
Yes. I happened to be having lunch with a friend of mine at Microsoft the day that they were broadcasting Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer and Bob Herbold doing basically a pep talk about the Department of Justice thing. They basically said, hey, let the lawyers deal with all that stuff, and you guys just keep making the best products you can make and keep pleasing customers. And it was just, I swear to God, it could have been 5 years ago about the Apple lawsuit. It could have been, you know, some time ago with IBM OS2, you know, shenanigans or whatever. It was just basically, I was just really happy to see it because it's like, okay, they're still doing the same winning kind of stuff, like rah-rah, make the best products and don't worry about all the craziness going on the side.
You were a woman in marketing and management at Microsoft. Did you ever sense that it was a culture that wasn't particularly amenable to women?
I think the only way that the culture is not amenable to women is that the company will take every ounce of your energy that you will give it. And if you have small kids at home who also will take every ounce of energy you will give them, you're kind of going to run up against some problems. And so actually we have a lot of MBA friends that are couples, you know, the man and woman both work at Microsoft. And a lot of the women have left to, you know, work part-time and hang out with their kids, and the guys have all stayed. So I guess that says something.
You've been listening to a TechWeb Internet audio report. Thanks for listening.